You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
It's the Score North Twin Show.
And welcome to a State of the Twins edition of the Score North Twin Show. Gentlemen, we did this last year when we brought the show back in the second half of the season. We devoted every Monday to a State of the Twins discussion with some key questions. And since this is the first Monday of the season, Twins are 2-1. Kind of an interesting way to get to 2-1, and we'll talk about all of those things. But we'll do our State of the Twins. Trevor Plouffe Tuesdays back in the mix tomorrow, so strap in to the Score North Twin Show. Plus, Dex has already pumped out a couple extra innings podcasts. He is our Twins beat potter here now on the Score North Twin Show. He'll be at the ballpark on a regular basis. But yeah, if you haven't already, we launched a new Score North Twin Show YouTube channel about 3 weeks ago. You helped us get over 2,000 subscribers.
Thank you.
Very early on in the process, so thank you. If you haven't already, click the like button and the subscribe button on the Score North Twin Show YouTube channel. But yeah, boys, the quick overview. Twins are 2-1. They are third place in the American League Central, a game behind Detroit. 25th in runs scored per game after the first weekend. 14th in runs allowed per game. They were first before yesterday's debacle where they got smoked 11-0. But let's start with Dex. Your favorite current Twins thing after three games?
So this one might not be as sexy, but it's been my favorite thing in just three games of watching the Twins. I think this team's defense has drastically improved. And in a defense, by the way, that was still pretty decent last year. It wasn't like it was an atrocious defense by any means. But last year at first base specifically, which was mostly held by Alex Kirilloff, the Twins were minus 10 in defensive runs saved, which was the worst figure in the American League at first base. Only the Royals and Twins, they had the worst figure at minus 10 at first base. Now you swap in Carlos Santana, whose glove was on full display multiple times over the three-game series in Kansas City, digging out scoops, knows exactly what he's doing. And even if you replace an average player there, so just a neutral player that's going to give you zero defensive run save, but obviously isn't a negative player, the Twins would have had the second best defense in the American League last season. If you just plug in zero instead of minus 10, they would have been comfortably second. Toronto's defense last year was absurd, obviously anchored by Kevin Kiermaier, who's one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. But those subtle little things, we always take first base for granted. Just put a guy there, right? It doesn't matter. He can just hit in the lineup and you can forget about his defense. With Carlos Santana, who's already a really good switch hitter, can work counts, he provides this extra, like, real oomph at first base that this team really hasn't had in a long time. Joe Mauer, towards the end of his tenure at first base, actually did make some pretty significant improvements and was a capable first baseman. But when you look at, you know, CJ Cron over there, Miguel Sano spent time at first base, there was a lot of guys at first, and now you have a legitimate first baseman that makes your defense that much better.
He was great too, and he in fact, it's lost because the game was such a blowout, but the play that Julian made, which in the first inning yesterday, which was a great play by him, and as Provis said, that's a play he does not make last year. Carlos Santana's pick on that throw was outstanding as well. Like,
how
that's
many
the type
picks
of play
did he have? He had two. Correa had a couple plays in the opener on Thursday last week where, like, he's throwing it into the ground intentionally because he's got to get it there from a long distance, and boom, like, Santana makes the pick to complete play.
It's fun to watch, man. Fun to watch.
Yeah.
Favorite thing for me? Sorry, Dex, go ahead.
I was going to say, just probably like two or three like legitimate picks that he was able to scoop and bail out. And look, Correa's always going to have like incredible range and plays, but there's still going to be times where obviously you're going to have to bail yourself out with some big plays.
He likes to skip throws too. Phil's right. So like, if he trusts you, it's great. Favorite thing for me is very, very clear, and knock on wood, I'm doing it because I want to get ahead of this game. Byron Buxton started the opener and then game two on Saturday in center. Yes, he DH'd on Sunday. but he had what, 3 hits and 10 at bats. He had the big game on Saturday, and it looks like the speed is still damn good, which I was a little bit like, okay, he's got this knee flap thing done, but does that impact his speed? The speed looks good. He looks comfortable. Like, he hasn't looked comfortable. He did not look comfortable in any situation in all of 2023 for sure. Mm-hmm. So that is easily my favorite thing, and I hope it maintains. I have questions about it, but I appreciate it while it's going on, and that's the fact. Byron Buxton back in center, and it's not just a token appearance type of thing. It looks like it has some legs, and I do like the fact that they play him 2 of the 3 games out there, and that they really do appear hell-bent on just seeing if it works now. It doesn't feel like nearly the, okay, he can't play on Sunday or he can't play on Saturday. He played all 3 games, and if you can get him for 2 of 3 games of series in center field, realistically, I think you feel really good about that.
And DH a bunch of the other games, 100%. Let's stay on this for a minute, because I agree with you. Buxton's the thing. I could give you a couple other things, but like, the thing that I am the most intrigued by is Buxton. He is my favorite current Twins thing too. So I'm going to double up with Judd here. That game on Saturday, the double he had, it was kind of a flare over the third baseman's head in like shallow left field. And you know how like you watch a baseball game for years and years and years, you sort of know, watching from the camera view behind the pitcher, what the outcome of a play should be. Oh, there's a ground ball toward shortstop. That's going to be a 6-4-3 double play. Or, oh, there's a ground ball at the middle. That might be an infield single based on what we know. Like, your brain is programmed to know the outcome of a baseball event because you've watched thousands of them, right? And he kind of hits that little flare over the third baseman's head. And we've seen that type of contact where, okay, the ball is kind of traveling at this speed. It's certainly not like a blooper. It's moving enough. Nice little single there for Byron Buxton, right? And the left fielder runs over, picks it up, throws it in, right? Usually it's just he throws it in. The batter rounds first base hard and goes back. And he's already like diving headfirst into second base. I think Rocco may have said it. He has broken the speed of the game. And even at age 29, age 30, what you think a play is supposed to look like. And he did this when he came into the big leagues 8-9 years ago. He'd hit a ground ball to the left side. And like, well, I've seen that 10,000 times in my life. The third baseman's going to field it, and the batter's going to be thrown out by 3 steps. And boom, the camera showed. And Byron Buxton's like crossing first base before the ball gets there. Mm-hmm. So he still has that. With that double, and he had the other double too, but with that double on Saturday, it's like, wow, that the electric Byron Buxton still exists even after all these physical problems.
What I enjoyed is that he was actually taking a lot of pitches and working counts. So Buck has been a kind of, he's a first ball swinger. He's going to go up there, and if he gets the first pitch he likes, he will swing. And I don't hate that necessarily, but very small sample size, 3 games he obviously played, but he saw 38 pitches in those 3 at-bats, or in the 3 games, excuse me, in those 3 games. So you take the 38 pitches divided by the 10 at-bats, that's 3.8 pitches per at-bat, which is nearly almost
12 plate appearances.
12 plate appearances too. Yep, because, yeah, he obviously got the 12 plate appearances. So that number is huge, because even if you take just his at-bats, not even his plate appearance in the last 2 years, he was averaging about 2.4. So he's not seeing a lot of – he was never seeing a ton of pitches. If Byron Buxton can start working a count – and not putting himself 0-2 in the hole, oh my God, obviously, anytime you have a player that is not 0-2 after 2 pitches, your life's going to be a lot easier. That's the part I'm very intrigued by. Can he start working a count, laying off some bad pitches? Because if he gets, obviously, hitter-friendly counts, he's going to have so much more success, which is something that's never really been part of his game.
Yeah, and you want him on base. So if he can, there's going to be some pitchers that'll give him a chance to get ahead, you know, 2-1, 3-1, 2-0, and can he coax some more walks out of some of these plate appearances too?
And the power is great, but I would make a case that if the speed is as good as it appeared to be against KC, that's what intrigues me the most. Like what I'm intrigued by is when a shortstop has to hurry every throw and starts to hyperventilate, because the guy's so fast that the shortstop looks up and he's damn near to first base. Like, that's what I've missed, because there are so few guys in this game that can actually make the game from a fielding standpoint hell to play, and he can.
Yeah. And like as we sit here and try to process the Royce Lewis injury, you know, and I'm sure we'll get to that in our thing that we're most nervous about, but if part of the equation for replacing Royce Lewis is you just get vintage Byron Buxton and he's going to be playing in most of the games and he's still as fast as he was 5 years ago. And okay, that makes you feel like they can weather this a little bit more. If you're getting no Royce Lewis and you're getting this broken version of Buxton, then you start to do the math on how do you even get to 90 wins or 86 wins and get a wild card spot. But it changes things. For him to be playing like it's been three games, and who knows what we might revisit this in a week for next week's State of the Twins, and hopefully nothing happens. But you never know with him. But right now, it's good to have the old Byron Buxton back. Mm-hmm. Okay, a Twins thing that's making you nervous, Dex.
This is an obvious one. I have a little bit of a carryover too, but the obvious one for me is starting pitching depth. I went over some of the Royce Lewis stuff with Judd on Extra Innings, and I'm sure you guys probably have more takes on that too now. It's been a few days, especially after the diagnosis and Eric Falvey saying, well, it's not mild and it's not medium. Then just say severe. Why can't you just say the words, it's a severe quad strain? I don't understand why we have to read between those lines. But the thing that makes me most nervous is this starting pitching depth. So Bailey Ober just got shelled. Every single thing he threw across the Royals, they were tattooing. Exit velo was up. I mean, he almost gave up a fourth home run to Bobby Witt Jr. He lasts, what, 14, 15 batters before Rocco has to turn to the bullpen. It's not obviously ideal there. They need Ober to have success here. He cannot play himself out of the rotation. I actually really enjoyed what I saw from Pablo Lopez. I am actually very more encouraged after one start of Joe Ryan. But they cannot afford for Bailey Ober to play himself out of this rotation. Maybe the flip side of that is to say, well, if that is the case, then they'll have to trade for a starter. But then that comes from as a need of desperation. And you're just probably looking for an arm or a body. And I don't think Simeon Woods Richardson or David Fester are going to come up here and just light it up from AAA when they need to insert into the rotation. So in general, this depth of starting pitching, and there's been a lot of good Twins teams that have made playoffs in the last 20 years that have had really good lineups and a really good frontline guy, but no secondary person behind them that you feel comfortable with. The depth of the starting pitching is probably going to be something we'll all just have to watch and talk about throughout the entire course of the season.
This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
Well, and Bailey Ober, man, like you've documented it. He's had issues early in games. I think Bailey Ober is a good, solid rotational piece. It's going to take him 2 months to get that ERA. It'll literally take him like 2 months of pretty good pitching to get that ERA back to a place where it doesn't look like a train wreck.
Well, and this is the problem with what both of you guys are saying is this is also clearly an I told you so. Like this would not be a, wow, the starting pitching, we expected great things. Like this was a, you needed to go out and get a guy. So if this becomes a problem, this was a problem that everyone and their brother basically said should be addressed. That to me is a bit of an issue. Although I will say this, Kenta Maeda got shelled, lit up in his first start. Like if Sonny Gray, when he comes back from the hamstring with Cardinals, pitches well, that's a bummer for Twins fans. But this whole, well, Kenta Maeda got away, he got absolutely lit up in his first start.
Right, which means nothing, by the way. Like, the Bailey Ober thing means nothing, too, after one start. Sure. I think if it's like three or four and now there's something building. I don't, with Maeda or with Bailey Ober, all right, guys, whatever. Like, he's going to start 30 times and they won 2 out of 3. So, doesn't mean that they don't. They need depth still, and they do need at some point probably a true number two starter if nobody emerges from within.
Yeah.
So
that's a big ask, though. That's a large ask.
Don't you think, though, that the version of Joe Ryan that we saw?
Well, that's my guy. Yes. Yes.
He's your guy that you're concerned about?
No. He's my guy. I think the top two starters could be fine. Pablo is a one. He's really good. I think Joe could be a two. Yeah. I think where I get really worried is the three. But I mean, that's still a big ask to be like, oh, we didn't have a three, so now we got to go find one. That's not a simple thing. But yes, I think the fact that Joe Ryan, and it wasn't smart, but the fact that he tried to pitch hurt for so long and didn't tell people really, I think, skewed his entire year last year.
Oh, it did. I mean, it was a 7-week stretch that torpedoed his ERA and his home run rate and all these things. And like it, the Twins lost games that they probably wouldn't have.
I also think that they rightfully so got mad. The Twins did. It's like, dude, you were hurt and didn't tell us. Like, we want to know yeah. when guys are hurt. And so I think that that probably internally damaged the trust between him and Baldelli and the staff.
Yeah.
So, but I do think Ryan's got a good chance to lock in to the two. The question is, can Paddock lock in to the three? And you cannot assume, there's a lot of assumptions here. I don't think it's fair to assume that Paddock is absolutely going to be fine. I think he needs to prove that.
Yeah. Okay, what's a Twins thing that's making you nervous besides Bailey Ober, Judd?
Matt Wallner. I harped on this all spring. I didn't think the length of his slump and his struggles in the spring to me got to a point where it's not just a fluky thing where it's like, oh, he'll be fine when the season starts. Like, Matt Wallner had a really, really nice season last year. But the reality is, just like in football, this is professional sports. Teams spend time adjusting to what you do well, forcing you to adjust to what they adjusted to. And there's clearly been an approach to him. And I don't know if it purposely started in spring training, but he was 1-for-6. He has already struck out 4 times. And I just have some real concerns. I think ultimately, long-term, he might be fine. But he also strikes me as a guy that very well might earn himself a trip back to St. Paul, at least, to get things right. So this is a definite concern. I would not assume that he is absolutely going to turn this thing around by himself up here. I think this is adjustment to adjustments, and now it's up to him to adjust his approach. And it doesn't appear so far like he has been able to do it. And I don't think there's time to do that up here. I think that's the thing that you probably have to go down and work on.
Yeah, there was an at-bat on Saturday where Kirloff was on second, and Buxton got hit by a pitch, so it's first and second. Correa lines out to left, and then Wallner just, I think, 3 pitches, just 1, 2, 3, you're out, like a Bugs Bunny cartoon, just horrible swings at the plate. And I know Corey Provis talked about, hey, Rocco pulled him aside after the slump and said, you're making the team, so like, don't worry about changing things up with your routine. You got this team made, dude, calm down. And then he went out and played pretty well in spring training after mostly playing like garbage for the first few weeks. But Provis also mentioned, I think he's learning a new swing. He's gripping the bat a little higher. Like he's kind of going through a completely different mechanics to obviously probably combat the idea that other teams kind of know things about him a little bit more. But the Twins really can't afford for a guy to be reworking his swing and figuring out how to struggle for a little bit before he gets better. So yeah, I'm definitely concerned. And then the defensive miscue, and I still can't, like, I wish I was there in the game, the Bobby Witt Jr., who, by the way, if he played for the Yankees or Astros, Bobby Witt Jr. is a top 3 player talked about in baseball. He's awesome.
Yeah.
He is badass. He's phenomenal. But he's got some speed, but I have no idea if Wallner was shaded on the GD line, but how the hell does that ball go pretty much near the second base side, go right up the middle almost, and Bobby Witt Jr. easily hustles in for a double, and Matt Wallner's like nowhere to be found on normal depth. The whole thing to me was very strange. So I am with Judd. There is definitely some concern there.
Yeah, he's not going to stay on the roster because of his defense and his foot speed, right? No. So he's got to mash.
Well, they've done, I thought the opening series was very instructive too. They clearly, and this is not breaking news, but they clearly will sacrifice defense for platoons.
Yeah. Like, so they've deemed, like, they've clearly deemed like the 50 point jump in OPS collectively or whatever. Correct. Will outweigh maybe, you know, a batted ball falling in or something.
Correct.
And yeah, I mean, I think I'm fine with that in most circumstances, especially when you have Byron Buxton playing center field in most of your games and Carlos Correa playing short. Those guys can make up for some other deficiencies defensively, a first baseman that can scoop everything like Carlos Santana. So to take some calculated shots in other places is not a terrible idea. Okay, the thing that's making me the most nervous is the Royce Lewis timeline. So it came out, and Declan already kind of poked at, well, it's not mild, it's not medium. So, okay, so it's severe, and the Twins have said, Derek Falvey said, that it's going to be a month of rest before they can even, like, get in there and figure out how bad it is and what the timeline is. So we need a month before we set a timeline. Yeah. I feel like I saw some people interpreting this incorrectly, where he's going to be out at least a month. No, he's going to be out at least a month until they figure out how long he's out, right?
They said June possibly,
So he's going to be out for at least 2 months, most likely.
Probably. Yeah.
And we've seen him come back from injuries with a fiery vengeance. So I have no doubt that when he comes back, he'll just jump right back in and hit grand slams and whatever. But the fact that you're going to be without your probably best player for at least 2 months, and this is now his fifth IL trip since 2022, you feel bad for him, man. And, you know, organizationally, I don't know. It's so easy to sit here and be like, you know, what are the trainers doing? I saw so many people tweeting like they need to be less muscular and do more yoga. I don't know what the answer is, but I know that Brooks Lee's out for a month and Royce Lewis is going to be out, and they've just, and Byron Buxton, you know, we know his history, that they've just had some atrocious luck short term and long term with some of their best players in the organization. So yeah, the timeline is the thing that makes me the most nervous.
It's just a huge bummer because it's not even the fact that the Twins lineup is obviously losing one of their best players. Like, Royce Lewis is an exciting player for fans to go see every single day. Yeah. And now that guy's out. Like, that, it's not even the fact of you're losing, you know, your number three hitter and a really good defensive third baseman. You're losing a guy that is very marketable and guy that you'd really want to root for. And the worst thing that you can possibly have happen is this turns into Buxton 2.0, where I think the majority of smart Twins fans know that Byron Buxton isn't soft. But then you have the other half, mostly Minnesota sports fans, who kind of just have a toe or two into the Twins, that criticize Byron Buxton because he can't stay healthy, and it's his fault that he can't stay healthy. Not anything with bad luck, not like anything with Royce Lewis just stepping on a base weird and his quad goes up. Like, that's the frustrating part, that Twins fans are basically being robbed of a really good player that they want to see over just a fluke random thing.
Is it a fluke, or are there leg problems here? Like, he's hurt the knees twice, and now he hurt, you know, the quad, which is like, I wonder from a skeleton standpoint, if it all does make sense to doctors, because that certainly did appear to be a pretty innocuous play, right? Like,
it's not like, Declan's saying fluke, you're saying leg problems. I think the question is someone doing something wrong or correctable that, like, that's what we need to know. Is he just like, is his body just susceptible to injuries? Yeah. Or is there something different that could or should be happening in his training that the Twins haven't had a handle on? Because if the answer to the second question is there's really nothing, it literally just is like he's either unlucky or it's something with his ligaments and joints and muscles. Like, how is there anyone to blame is my question.
Well,
is there anyone that we can fire?
They've tried. They fired their poor athletic trainers like 3 times, haven't they?
It's several times over the years, yeah.
So in The Athletic, they had a piece about how they devised this plan for Royce Lewis in the offseason, and it was basically length strengthening. Like, this whole thing was about strengthening his legs, and there's even these terms of, we talked a lot about isometrics, which is tendon health. We've been doing a great job with running plyometrics, which is like jumping single leg hops, two leg hops. So, like, they were strengthening his legs for this type of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, it stinks, and it's probably at least 2 months. I June 1st would be probably the best case scenario. You're probably looking at more like mid-June or maybe even post-All-Star break. Yeah.
And whenever he does come back, you can see him at Target Field.
That's right.
You can also go and watch some other fun Twins players. Opening day this Thursday, April 4th at 3:10 p.m. against the Guardians, the Gardos.
The Guards.
The first 10,000 fans through the gates get an opening weekend beanie. You can see Byron Buxton. Pablo Lopez is slated to start that game. Carlos Correa. Secure your spot at twins.com/tickets. twins.com/tickets. Okay, one more trip around the room here, starting with Declan. give us something else that people should be talking about or paying attention to as it pertains to the Twins.
This Joe Ryan uptick in velocity is pretty interesting here. So last year, his slider, he didn't abandon it, but it was incredibly hittable. It was awful. I think opponents hit like 325 against it. It wasn't great. And all of a sudden, and this is just one start, so maybe his strength is up, but that velocity on his slider shot up about 4 miles per hour. So that goes from an 83-mile-an-hour slider to an 87-mile-per-hour slider. So that makes life a lot easier. His fastball was up. He has got a split finger that he's going to be throwing a lot more. The fastball is still going to be, you know, his bread-and-butter-like pitch. It's going to generate the most swings and misses. We even saw that on Saturday. But, man, if his secondary pitching has taken a significant up in velocity and becomes obviously harder to hit, then, yeah, you're talking about really solid 1-2 punch from Pablo to Joe Ryan. But I would say that was probably something that stood out to me the most was the fact that all of a sudden his velocity goes up significantly. Is that offseason strengthening? Is that probably mechanics? Maybe a combination of both? It's a really interesting concept because all of a sudden this guy goes from throwing an 83-mile-an-hour slider to an 87-mile-per-hour slider in about 4 or 5 months. I kind of want to know how the hell that happens basically overnight.
He's a dude. Yeah, he's the way people were talking about him 2 years ago, like that guy is still in there. And we saw it the first half of last season. And if the velo is up and he's a little nastier, he's kind of a weird guy, kind of a quirky guy.
That's what I think is part of it, too. But
he's fun.
He's got good stuff, man. Mine is going to be a reminder again to pay attention to this and to be thankful as well as a sports fan. And if you're a Twins fan, Carlos Correa's defense. Carlos Correa, I've beaten this dead horse before, but how many shortstops have we been through here? How many opening day, it became a running joke, the opening day shortstop list, and the amount of guys that didn't make plays, didn't get
Pedro
the balls.
Florimone.
So they didn't get errors, but they didn't get to the ball either. And now I don't want anyone to just assume or take for granted, just defensively, forget the bat. This guy is special. The tag he made on the stealing second base,
yes,
on, I believe it was Saturday, was a ridiculously stupid play in a good way. I mean, it's a good throw it's a decent throw by Vasquez to get the runner. But more importantly, go back and watch. I can't even describe it. How Correa applies that tag to get the out.
It's a lesson in physics. So what he's doing is the what happens a lot of times, shortstops and second basemen, they will catch the ball as soon as it comes into their radius, right? So they will like reach to catch the ball.
Yep.
And then so now they've caught the ball and now they're going to let their arm and glove go and make the tag.
Right, because that's
But the ball travels faster on its own without it being stopped by your glove and then transferred by your arm. And Correa understands this. Now it's a lot easier said than done to let the ball travel as far as you possibly can, because you're worried that it might hit the runner, but he lets the ball and the throw do the work for him, and he'll catch the ball as his glove is hitting the runner.
Right.
It's just, I'd love to hear him talk about this. Like when he talked about the pickoff stuff during the playoffs last year,
right.
That dude, he has a doctorate in the small things when it comes to playing shortstop. Right?
And that's my point. Don't take that for granted. It's really, really special. And yes, he makes plays like that consistently. So you're surprised when he doesn't, but the amount of plays that guy makes, his approach to baseball, the fact that with Santana at first base, he's going to be completely comfortable on hard plays, skipping the throw, and he's not skipping it because his arm is not strong enough. He's doing it on purpose. All of those things. I just think it's like watching an artist paint. He's painting baseball and it's gorgeous to watch.
Yes. Speaking of painting, so Dex brought this up in just the prep email that we were kicking back and forth. And I remember hearing Morneau make this point as well, that Julian has these amazing, he's a freaking rookie still basically, right? Like last year was his first year and he understands the strike zone like a 33-year-old veteran. It's like watching Kevin Youkilis or watching Carlos Santana, who's been in the league for 2 decades. Yep. He has that type of plate discipline. And Justin Morneau on the broadcast made a point that when you have played throughout the minor leagues, this era of players are coming up the last few years with an electronic strike zone in a lot of these ballparks at a lot of these levels. So You're no longer like from game to game trying to figure out for the first three innings what's Blue's zone going to be tonight, right? What's Angel Hernandez going to let us get away with? You know what the strike zone is. It's the same thing every game. And so it's easier for those guys to spit on a pitch that's, now he does it better than almost any other young player, but it's something to watch with players coming up. Do we get more Julians that just have a mastery of a strike zone that's uniform for every single plate appearance?
And then when does that strike zone get put into place instead of like opening day with Laz Diaz behind the plate, having no idea where the strike zone is?
Laz Diaz.
How do we get Laz Diaz on opening day behind the dish? Like, who starts him behind? He's our crew chief, so he's behind the dish. Like, my God, talk about ruining opening day.
It's hilarious, man. Just out there, just arguing with hitters and catchers.
and the hitters are now, you know, they're right.
Yeah. And by the way, also, Corey Provis, first series in the books as the lead voice and face now of Twins baseball on the TV. Good to have him. He made a note on social media that he was very nervous throughout the entire opener on Thursday. You wouldn't know it because he's a total pro, but it's fun having Corey Provis in the mix. So there it is, boys. Our first State of the Twins episode in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Dex is pumping out extra innings episodes. So you're just going to see a lot of Score North Twin Show content from this group and beyond. So we're excited for this season. If you haven't already, click the like button and the subscribe button on the Score North Twin Show YouTube channel. And it helps us when you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts as well. Trevor Plouffe is back from his spring break. He'll be back in the mix tomorrow for a Trevor Plouffe Tuesday on the Score North Twin Show.